Chapter 43, Aki. The monofilament cable was almost invisible against the rubble and ooze of the sea floor. Even in the light from Aki's harness lamp, it barely reflected a spiderweb's glimmer here and there amidst the rock and sediments atop this jagged ridgeline. The cable had been designed to be hard to detect. It was the only certain way Streaker could communicate with her two outlying work parties without giving away her location. Aki had been forced to search for over an hour, using the best instruments at his disposal and knowing where to look, before finding the line to the island. By the time he had clipped his neural tap into the line, more than half of the oxygen in his breather was gone. A lot of time had been spent just getting away from the ship, and Aki wasn't even sure his departure had gone unnoticed. The taciturn electrician's mate in charge of the equipment locker shouldn't have questioned orders when Aki asked for breathing gear. Another Finn, an off-duty engine room rating, had followed him from a distance after he had left the equipment locker, and Aki had to dodge through the outlock to shake the Stenos off his tail. In less than 2 days, a subtle change had come over the crew of Streaker. A new alignment of power had been set up. Crew members who had formerly been of little influence now pushed their way to the front of the food lines and adopted dominant body postures, while others went about their duties with eyes downcast and flukes drooping. Rank and official position had little to do with it. Such things had always been informal aboard Streaker anyway. Dolphins were more apt to pay attention to subtle shifts in dominance than to formal authority. Now even racism seemed to be a factor. A disproportionate number of the new figures of authority were of the Stenos subbreed. It amounted to an informal coup. Officially, Takata Jim was acting on behalf of the unconscious Kredaki until a ship's council could be convened. But Streaker's water had the taste of a herd with a new dominant male. Those close to the old bull were on the out, and the cronies of the new swam in the vanguard. Aki found it all quite illogical and a bit disgusting. It brought home to him that even the highly selected Fen of Streaker's crew could submit to ancient patterns of behavior under stress. He now saw what the Galactics meant when they said that 300 years of uplift was too short a time for a race to be ready for starships. It was a rude realization. It made Aki feel more like a client than he ever had in the mixed egalitarian colony of Calafia. The discovery did help in one way, though. It gave him a primitive satisfaction in his act of mutiny. Legalistically, he was committing a serious crime, abandoning the ship to make contact with Gillian Baskin against specific orders from the acting captain. But now Aki felt he knew the truth. He was a member of a crew of imitation spacemen. There was no way, short of Kredaki miraculously recovering, that they were going to get out of this mess without intervention by their patrons. He discounted the value of Ignacio Metz, or Emerson Denite, or even Toshio, for that matter. He agreed with Makani that their only hope lay in Dr. Baskin or Mr. Orly coming home. By now, he had come to accept that Orly was lost. The rest of the crew believed this, and it was one more reason morale had gone to hell since Kredaki's accident. The comm line quietly sent a carrier tone directly to his stato-acoustic nerve, as Aki waited impatiently for Toshio to return with Gillian. The line was not being used for anything else now that Charles Dart had signed off, but every second that passed increased the chance that the present comm operator aboard the ship would detect the residence of his tap. Aki had set it up so they couldn't pick up his conversation with Toshio, but even a dullard comsec Finn couldn't miss the side effects in time. "Where are they?" he wondered. "Surely they know I only have so much air, and this metal-rich water makes my skin itch." Aki breathed slowly for calm. A teaching rhyme of Kanink ran through his mind. "Past is what once was, a remnant that's called memory. In it lie the causes of what now is. Future is what will be, envisioned, seldom seen. In it lie results of what now is. Present is that narrowness, passing, always flickering, proof of the joke of what now is. Past, future, and present were among the hardest ideas to express explicitly in trinary. The rhyme was meant to teach causation as the human patrons and most other sophons saw it, while keeping essential faith with a cetacean view of life. It all seemed so simple to Aki. At times he wondered why some of these dolphins of Earth had so much trouble with such ideas. One thought, one imagined actions and their consequences, considered how the different results would taste and feel, then one acted. If the future was unclear, one did the best one could and hoped. It was how humans had muddled through during the ages of their horrible, orphaned ignorance. Aki saw no reason why it should be so hard for his people, especially when they were being shown the way.
"Aki, Toshio here. Jillian's coming. She had to break away from something important, so I ran ahead. Are you all right?"
Aki sighed. "In the depths, with itching blowmouth, I tread in wait at duty's calling, as the cycloid rolls in."
"Hang on," Toshio called, interrupting the rhyme.
Aki grimaced. Toshio never would develop a sense of style.
"Here's Jillian," Toshio finished. "Take care of yourself, Aki."
The line crackled with static.
"You too, diving flying partner."
"Aki?" It was the voice of Jillian Baskin, made tinny by the weak connection, but almost infinitely gratifying to hear.
"What is it, dear? Can you tell me what's going on the ship? Why won't Kraydeki talk to me?"
That wasn't what Aki had thought she would ask first. For some reason, he had expected her main concern to be Tom Orley. Well, he wasn't about to bring the subject up if she didn't.
"Makani, patient healer, sends me out with danger warning. Soundless, flukeless lies Kraydeki, Streaker's fortune strangely waning, and the taste of atavism fouls the waters."
There was silence at the other end. No doubt Jillian was formulating her next question in a way that would let him answer unambiguously in trinary. It was a skill Toshio sometimes sadly lacked. Aki brought his head up quickly. Was that a sound? It hadn't come from the comm line, but from the dark waters around him.
"Aki," Jillian began, "I'm going to ask you questions phrased to take three-level answers. Please spare artistry for brevity in answering."
"Gladly, if I can," Aki thought. He had often wondered why it was so hard to hold direct conversations in trinary without beating around the bush in poetic allusion. It was his native tongue as much as Anglic was, and still he was frustrated by its resistance to shortcuts.
"Aki, does Kraydeki ignore the fish of dreaming? Does he chase them, or does he feed them?"
Jillian was asking if Kraydeki was still functioning as a tool user. Was he lost to injury, drifting in an unconscious dream hunt, or worse, was he dead? Somehow Jillian had immediately gone right to the heart of the matter. Aki was able to answer with blessed brevity.
"Chasing squid in deepest water."
There was that sound again, a rapid clicking coming from not far away. Curse the necessity to keep his neural socket linked to the static of this line. The sounds were close enough to leave little doubt. Someone was hunting for him out here.
"All right, Aki, next question. Does Hikahi calm all with her kinink rhythms? Does she echo herd obedience, or does she sing an absent silence?"
Dolphin sonar is a highly directional thing. He felt the edge of a lobe of a sonic beam pass just above him without hitting him broadside. Aki got down as close to the ocean floor as he could and made an effort to direct his own nervous clickings into the soft sand. He wanted to reach out with one of his harness arms and grab a rock or something for stability, but was afraid the tiny whirring of the motors would be heard.
"Absent silence fades the memory of Hikahi. Absent silence from Tisht and Suesi." He wished he, too, were absent this place and back in his quiet stateroom aboard Streaker. Okay. Is their silence that of netted capture? Is it of orca fearful waiting? Or is it the silence of fishes feeding? Aki was about to answer when, like one whose eyes were suddenly struck by a bright light, he was awash in a loud beam of pulsed sound, highly directional and from his left and above. There was no question a dolphin up there was instantly aware of him. Takata Jim bites the cables. My own job is mine no longer. His fen relay, his lying songs. Aki was so agitated that some of that actually came out as sound rather than impulses sent to the monofilament. There was no use trying any longer for secrecy. He made ready to jettison the line and turned his melon toward the intruder. He fired off a sonar pulse strong enough, he hoped, to momentarily stun him. The echoes of his burst returned, giving him a vivid image. There was a thrashing sound as a very large dolphin swung aside out of his beam. Kathajan. Aki recognized the echo at once. Aki, what was that? Are you in fighting patterns? Break off if you have to. I'm coming home fast as I... Duty absolved, Aki popped the neural link free and rolled to one side. He acted none too soon. A blue-green laser bolt sizzled through the spot where he had been seconds before. So, that's the way of it, he thought, as he dove into the canyon next to the ocean ridge. The hammerhead is out to get me, and no politeness about it. He did a quick roll to his right and speared downward toward the shadows. Dolphins were known for a reluctance to kill anything that breathed air, but they were not a limited race. Even before uplift, humans had witnessed cases of fin murdering fin. In enabling cetaceans to be starfarers, men also made them more efficient when they chose to kill. A line-bright laser beam hissed a bare meter ahead of him. Aki clenched his jaw and dove through the streak of scalding bubbles in its wake. Another narrow, searing bolt sizzled between his pectoral fins. He whirled and dove for the long sonic shadow of a jagged outcrop of rock. Kathajan's laser rifle could kill at long range, while the welder torch on Aki's harness was, like all sidearm tools, of use only up close. Obviously, his only chances were in flight or in trickery. It was very dark down here. All of the red colors were gone. Only blue and green could pass through from the day to illuminate a shadow-filled landscape. Aki took advantage of the rugged terrain and slipped between the sharp walls of a narrow rock cleft. There he stopped to wait and listen. The echoes he picked up through passive listening only told him that Kathajan was out there somewhere, searching. Aki hoped his own rapid breathing wasn't as loud as it sounded to him. He sent a neural query to his harness. The microcomputer in its frame told him he had less than half an hour's air left in his breather. That certainly put a limit on how long he could wait. Aki's jaws ground together. He wanted Kathajan's long pectorals between his teeth, much as he knew he was no match for the big stenos in size or strength. Aki had no way of knowing whether Kathajan was out here on his own or following orders from Takata Jim, but if there were some cabal of stenos at work, he wouldn't put it past them to kill the helpless Kredaki if that were the way to secure their plan. Unthinkable as it was, they could even get it into their heads to harm Jillian if she weren't careful how she made her return to the ship. The mere thought of any Finn participating in such crimes made Aki feel sick. I've got to get back and help Makani defend Kredaki until Jillian arrives. That takes priority over everything else. He slipped out of the cleft and swam a series of floor-hugging zigs and zags toward a small canyon to the southeast, in a direction away from Streaker and away from both Toshio's Island and the Thenanin wreck. It was the direction most likely to be unwatched by Kathajan. He could hear the giant casting about for him. The powerful beams of sound were missing for now. There was a good chance he would get a head start before he was detected. Still, it wasn't quite as tasty as the satisfaction he would have felt in surprising Kathajan with a snout ramming in his genitals. Jillian turned from the comm set to see anxiety on Toshio's face. It made him seem very young. Gone was the role of a rough, tough, worldly Mel. Toshio was an adolescent midshipman who had just found out his captain was crippled, and now his best friend might well be fighting for his life. He looked at her, hoping for reassurance that everything would be all right. Jillian took the youth's hand and pulled him into a hug. She held him, against his protests, until, at last, the tension went out of his shoulders, and he buried his face in her shoulder, holding her tightly. When he finally pulled away, Toshio didn't look at her, but turned away and wiped at one eye with the heel of his hand. "I'm going to want to take Kipiro with me," Jillian said to him. "Do you think you and Sahat and Denny can spare him?" Toshio nodded. His voice was thick, but he soon had it under control. "Yes, sir. Sahat may be a bit of a problem when I start giving him some of Kipiru's duties, but I've been watching the way you handle him. I think I can manage." "That's good. See if you can keep him off Denny's back, too. You're going to be military commander now. I'm sure you'll manage fine." Jillian turned to her small poolside campsite to gather her gear. Toshio went to the water's edge and switched on the hydrophone amplifier that would signal the two dolphins that they were wanted. Sahat and Kipiru had left an hour ago to await the evening foray of the Aborigines. "I'll go back with you if you want, Jillian." She shook her head as she gathered her notes and tools together. "No, Toshio. Denny's work with the Kikwi is damned important. You're the one who's got to keep her from burning down the forest with a spent match while she's preoccupied. Besides, I need you to maintain a pretense that I haven't left. Do you think you can do that for me?" Jillian zipped shut her watertight satchel and started slipping out of her shirt and shorts. Toshio turned away at first and started to blush. Then he noticed that Jillian didn't seem to care that he look. "I might never see her again," he thought. "I wonder if she knows what she's doing for me." "Yes, sir," he said. Toshio's mouth felt very dry. "I'll act just as harassed and impatient as ever with Dr. Dart, and if Takata Jim asks for you, I'll tell him you're off somewhere, or sulking." Jillian was holding her dry suit in front of her, preparing to step into it. She looked up at him, surprised by the wryness of his remark. Then she laughed. In two long-legged strides, she was over to him, seizing him into another hug. Without a thought, Toshio put his arms around the smooth skin of her waist. "You're a good man, Tosh," she said as she kissed him on the cheek. "And, you know, you've grown quite a bit taller than me. You lie to Takata Jim for me, and I promise we'll make a proper mutineer of you in no time at all." Toshio nodded and closed his eyes. "Yes, ma'am," he said as he held her tight.